Thanks so much for joining us for episode 35 of Forever 39. For those of you that are on social media, we've got a few ways you can connect with us. Follow us on Twitter at Forever39NJ. You can also find us on Facebook via the New Jersey 101.5 page, and you can email us at forever39@nj1015.com. You can download our podcast via the New Jersey 101.5 app, iTunes, or Google Play. In this episode, we're going to chat about how soon is too soon to start dating again after losing a loved one, and tipping at restaurants. But first, we're going to chat about open relationships. And joining us for the first two topics is friend of the show and New Jersey 101.5 staff member, Sergio Bichel. Thank you, Sergio.
Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you back, Sergio.
So I know a few people that are currently in open relationships, and it's something that seems to work very well for them, quite frankly. So I didn't think I would be able to find any statistics for how many people are in open relationships, but I did, and some of the results I thought were very interesting. So according to a survey released by Avio last year, only 4% of Americans have an open relationship, but that doesn't mean the rest of those surveyed aren't open to them. In fact, while 56% of those surveyed said they are morally opposed to the idea of having an open relationship, 44% said they are comfortable with it or feel neutral about it. So I thought that was kind of interesting that that's such a big percentage. And this probably won't come as a surprise, but more men are willing to try an open relationship than women.
Shocking.
Wow.
And if you think most people would split if their partner told them they wanted an open relationship, think again. So 44% of those surveyed said they would not automatically break up with their partner if that person requested to be open. So Megan and Sergio, what are your thoughts about
Sergio,
this?
You want to go first because mine are loud. And
I also know a lot of couples that are in an open relationship and have been. And I don't have a problem with it if it works for that couple.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, all right, if you don't want to have an open relationship, that's fine. I'm not gonna. I don't think you should be judged for that as a prude. But I also don't think that you should judge other couples who decide that that's how they're gonna have, a healthy sex life.
Now, Megan, your face is great because you're like,
No. Because I think when you're with someone in a committed relationship, you're with them in the committed relationship. This theory that everyone's like, we're by nature, we're never meant to be monogamous. Shut up. I think that's just a reach to cheat or to not be able to commit to a relationship or to not be able to just stay with one person.
How do you define commit? To me, it sounds like commit means to you means like you have to like just drudge through this relationship for the rest of your life just because you made that decision.
But
you don't like it, too bad.
I think then you are not together. But I think honesty and transparency and fidelity make a relationship. I think when you enter another person into the relationship, I know I was reading about it and it said one of the things was, as long as the person you bring in, the person that you're having the open relationship with, doesn't like break up your main primary union, that's where you can find the balance. I am telling you right now, if my husband came to me and said, one, I want an open relationship, or like, I'm done here. You're done here, buddy, because I married you wanting to be with you. And if you think that going to sleep with Susie Q on the corner is going to give you more fulfillment, then F you, get out, because you married me. You want to be with me.
But he still wants to be with you.
No, that's BS. It's complete BS.
He also, though, wants to be with Susie Q.
No, because then he doesn't love me anymore and he doesn't want to be with me. I'm not saying for some couples that isn't how it works, but I just have this vision of what marriage should be for me and what we are involved in. I just think it's just such a bunch of crap to say that you can just go around and sleep because I have this need. Shut up. You have a need.
Well, I don't know. I disagree with that. I mean, obviously you're not okay with it and that's fine, but other people could be okay with it. Like it's not a big deal because it's like, it's just sex. It's not having a relationship.
But what are we, 15? It's just sex.
Like, I think it depends on how you look at sex. So I know we talked about this with Tommy Farrell about like, how do you sort of look at sex? I do think that in marriage, having sex and making love is an extension of that love that you have for that person. It's a Agreed. Way to show that love.
Uh-huh. Where are you going?
But but I also think sex can just be for the sake of having sex because it's a biological need, desire that we all have. And I don't necessarily buy into the whole thing that we're meant to be monogamous with one person sexually for the rest of our lives.
Why can't you be with one person? Why must it be Steve instead of Dave today?
Because it's boring.
Oh my God, give me, that is so immature. That is so immature.
I don't know, Megan. I mean, I just look at it from a very practical standpoint. And when you think of—
Practical? How is that practical?
Because when you think about the rest of the world and the rest of, like, let's look at the animal kingdom. Very few animals are monogamous.
We are humans.
I mean, I think if you go back to the not too long after the caveman days, we probably weren't monogamous back then.
But either. we're also not killing rabbits and eating them in a cave.
But you know what? Here's the thing. What are the stats on men who cheat on their wives at some point in their life? I'm sure it's probably in the double digits. I'm guessing.
Oh, it's definitely in the double digits. Yeah.
Well, if you call it open marriage or you're cheating, you're still cheating either way.
No, it's different because open marriage, you have an arrangement, you know what you're doing, and there are certain rules.
There are certain rules to
it. I mean, if your husband goes out and does something, that's cheating because obviously you're not into it. But if you but if you weren't okay with it, that wouldn't be cheating. That's different.
The thing is like I wouldn't be able to handle this for my own relationship.
Right.
So I'm okay with someone else having an open relationship. It's not something I would be able to handle. And mainly for me, it would be because of jealousy. I would be concerned that, like, well, he had a better time with her and he's going to want to sleep with her more than he wants to sleep with me. I'd have a hard time with it. I also don't have that need to sleep around with other people.
Right.
So for me, it wouldn't work, but I totally understand why it works for other couples and why some couples desire that, because I think that we've bought into this whole thing about monogamy because we are intelligent and because we want love to mean that. But I don't think, biologically speaking, we're meant to be with one person.
One of the articles you sent when we were doing research, there was a part that said there's reclamation sex. And that's where, when you're in an open relationship, say you get back together with your primary partner, it's almost like you're reclaiming the other partner.
Interesting.
I guess that's a necessary thing if you're going outside the marriage, maybe to connect back with your spouse or whatever. And then one of the articles said something about, you know, you're out and you bump into the person and you're like, oh, we share a secret, wink, wink. Grow the hell up.
Oh, come on.
Oh, look
fun.
At you having sex the first. No. Oh, you're so cool. Well, you're having sex.
The reclamation the reclamation sex. I mean, couples who are in a monogamous relationship, they have that too. They have to rekindle sometimes their
So do
their
that
love
before
life.
You go have an open marriage. Like, go and rekindle. Fix it.
Oh,
make
come on.
Make it work.
I think it's different strokes for different folks.
Yes, I do agree. It just would not
Well, I actually saw a quote in Cosmopolitan magazine from Tammy Nelson. She's a Connecticut sex and couples therapist. And I just thought it really captured the idea of what an open marriage is. She says, quote, each partner assumes that the other is and will remain the main attachment, but that outside attachments of one kind or another are allowed as long as they don't threaten the primary connection, end of quote. And I think that kind of makes sense. Like, you're still committed to your partner. You still want to spend your life with your partner. You still love that person, but you like a little bit of sexual variety and you both are okay with that. So I mean, I don't have an issue with it. I don't think it's like a, you know, an attack on marriage or any of those things.
I don't think it's an attack on marriage, but I do think it's bizarre that you think that you're just so sexually you're into the soul, like sexual exploration, and you have to go, shut up, you're not that good at sex. And I just think it's ridiculous, and I think it's an excuse to just sleep around. I really do.
Well, what's wrong with that?
It just makes me sad. Like, when you commit to someone and you break that commitment.
But you like to exercise, yep. Right? And you couldn't see that not in your life. And you like variety, right? Some days maybe you go on the treadmill and some days you go on the Stairmaster. Well, some people just have an insatiable appetite for sex. And for whatever reason, one person's not enough or one person can't meet all their needs, but they absolutely love and adore that person, but they just need a little bit more and they don't want to step out. So they have this arrangement. And I think that the key is you both have to agree to it. Obviously, if Johnny doesn't agree to Alice, you know, stepping out, it's never going to work. But if they're both sort of like, I can get down with that.
Yeah. And there's different rules for it. I mean, there are couples who are into swinging together.
Yes.
Where they have, when they have the sex or having with it together with other people. And then there are other arrangements where they, you know, have sex separately with different partners because they're into different people.
I know like with the one couple that I know, they like to watch. So like if the wife decides she's going to have sex with somebody else, the husband likes to watch. Now, again, not for me. I couldn't do it for myself. I don't agree with you stepping out and your partner not knowing. That's cheating. And I don't agree with that. But if you both agree to this, I don't know what the problem is.
I think it's probably mostly guys who are okay with this, quite frankly.
Right. I agree.
Most of the couples that I know that are open and do stuff like this are mostly gay men. I know, okay. I think, one hetero couple, at least, I think, that does an open thing. But it's mostly gay men that I know.
But why do you think that is? Why do you think gay men are more open to that?
Or I think men in general are more open to it because that's how they view sex as more of a... Yeah. Less of an emotional attachment and more just a physical
That's an excellent thing. Point, actually.
I also think, and this is going to go into a whole other topic. Mm-hmm. But I also think, quite frankly, that it's harder for women to enjoy sex as much as men. I'm not saying we don't enjoy it, but I think for the most part, it's safe to say that men usually finish and women sometimes never even start. You know what I mean? Right. Like men are usually guaranteed an orgasm. They're guaranteed that like moment. And sometimes women are not. You know, we all know those statistics that it's very difficult for women to achieve orgasm during intercourse.
Right.
So I think that for men, you know, maybe just sex is more fun because they always usually get a payoff women struggle sometimes too.
Right. And that could be. And we do view it. That's an excellent point. Like I said, that Sergio had, we do view it differently, but it's just, I don't know if you've ever had sex with someone you're not really in love with and then sex with someone you're really in love with. It is for me. And I know I'm so Pollyanna and
the
fairy tale, but it's a completely different thing. It's a completely different thing.
It absolutely is a different thing. But sometimes you just don't want that kind of sex. Sometimes you want the throw against the wall, rip my clothes off kind of sex. And you're not looking
for
that.
Yeah, but you can have that if you're lucky. You can have that in your marriage as well.
I feel like when you're more, you know, when you love each other deeply, I think that kind of sex is harder. Because
I think it gets kind of kind of used to it.
Sure.
Yeah. But you do. I mean, just like Sergio, you were saying you need to change it up.
Sure.
I think you can change it up with your significant other and have a healthy marriage or relationship. It's just, it makes me sad to think people would go outside that bond.
Well, we want to hear from you guys. So are you currently in an open relationship or would you consider one? Take our poll over at NJ1015.com.
Okay, so the other day I had my niece and nephew with me, which is quite a common occurrence. They live across the street, always with us. So there's this one pizza place by us that they love, their chicken fingers. I know it's a pizza place, but they love them. And they are very good. So we ran in to get them dinner one night. And there was, I went in to pick up my order that I had placed. And there was a tip jar on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothered me because no one was doing anything other than bringing me my food. Like I was paying for the food. No one served me at a table and it bothered me. And the girl kept like eyeing the tip jar like I was supposed to put something in it. And I didn't because I just felt like there was no reason to do that. Now, that being said, when we go out to dinner, we are very good tippers. Mm-hmm. We tip at least 20% at least. And if the service is wonderful, we definitely treat it that way. And if it's very poor, we definitely treat it that way. But we're generous tippers. But are there places, like I'm thinking where baristas are or nail salons or the owner of a hair salon, sometimes they say you're not supposed to tip them, where you guys find it odd to tip or you think you should tip or you do tip and you're not sure if you should? Any of that?
Yeah. I mean, I'll always tip at a restaurant.
Always.
At least 20%. I will tip a bartender. even if they're just getting me a bottle, I'll leave them a dollar.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Yes. A girl that used to work here, she was a bartender, and she said a dollar a drink is the perfect tip.
Yeah, that's what
okay,
I do.
Okay, that makes sense.
But
sure.
I'll leave a tip at a diner, but I don't think I should leave a tip at a fast food joint or a pizzeria or things like that.
Yeah, and I don't think that tipping is necessary at Starbucks, for example.
Right.
Sometimes I will because they encourage you to tip. Like I pay with my phone and I get a little text message saying, hey, would you like to also leave a tip?
And then you feel like you have to, sure.
And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. But I feel very reluctant, whereas at a diner restaurant, I wouldn't.
How do you guys handle, because this one I always struggle with, I'm a big believer in tipping. I think it's really important to make sure that you tip for good service, and great service deserves even a higher tip. I'm one of those that
my
will always
don't.
Tip.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, they're from Portugal, and they do not understand tipping.
Sure, because Europeans don't.
It's never been part of their world.
It's part of the bill. They don't tip, right.
And when we would go out with them, they wouldn't leave a tip. I'm like, you have to leave a tip. And so their idea of leaving a tip on like a $100 meal was like $5.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
my gosh.
Like, $5? No. They thought
no,
that
mom,
was a lot.
Dad, no, right? No.
At least you need a 20.
Yeah,
and
please.
Like, and when I take them out, I make sure I tip. And like my mom will sometimes scold me like, why are you leaving so much money? I'm like, it's a tip. You have to. It's part of eating out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I've always struggled with the takeout thing. So when you order food and you go yourself to pick it up.
Right, like I did.
I never know what to do with that because a lot of times now it asks you if you pay with your debit or credit card.
I put an X there.
Do you want to leave a tip? And I always feel like I should. But I'm like, why am I leaving a tip? Like I actually went to them, picked the food up.
Well, my friend who worked in the restaurant business, she always says that when she does a pickup, she'll always leave at $5 no matter what it is. Like if she just, like if it's a pickup situation, no matter how much you're spending, it could be $50, it could be $100.
Okay.
She'll eat like $5.
Okay.
Because, you know.
But why does that annoy me? Like, why do I not want to do that?
Because you're not used to it, but it's like by you picking it up, you're denying the servers there.
That is true.
Some income because otherwise you would have been sitting there ordering the food, eating there, and tipping.
That's a good way of looking
at it. Yeah, but they also would have been waiting on me earning that tip.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, if they offer you the pickup service, they're sort of losing the way they make money.
Well, you know what server said is the table they dread the most? I thought this was interesting. Can you guys guess what table do you think servers would dread the most sitting in their section?
Young students or kids?
College students.
Totally.
That table
they have no
of college
money.
Students. Yeah.
Sure.
They say that's the most dreaded table.
I can imagine.
Get.
Oh, they'll leave a bunch of quarters.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're lucky.
Well, there was a study that was actually recently done by creditcards.com, and it shows 4 out of 5 Americans always leave a tip when dining, and the average amount left is 18%, which I think is actually too low. Men, Republicans, baby boomers, and those that live in the Northeast, New Jersey, holla, are the best tippers. But this is the other thing that was interesting. So in regards of other types of tips, 22% of those surveyed always tip housekeeping at hotels, their local barista as well, 22%. And okay. 62% say they always tip the hairdresser. So I thought it was interesting because I have encountered situations when I've been traveling with friends or family where the whole like maid housekeeper tip, they're like, what do you mean you leave a tip for the housekeeper?
I'm
like,
I just learned that.
I'm like, what do you mean you don't? Like,
At the hotel, do you leave the tip for the maid when you leave, or do you leave it every day?
So at the end of the week is when I do it.
Okay. That's what they, initially, that's what I was doing, but I've now changed that to every day because you get better service. And also the problem is let's say you have one person who services your room for 4 days and then she's not on that day that you check out, then that person loses out on that money.
Excellent
point. How much do you leave for your
How much do you leave?
I usually leave about $10 to $15 a day.
Okay.
So, and I don't know really if
that's... Do you need me to come over?
I don't know if that's too
that's
little
a lot
or too much.
To
like,
me.
I'm
that's
not sure.
I would do $5 a day. Maybe.
I'll do five a day.
Yeah, five a day. Okay.
It depends. Like if I didn't use the towels that day, I might not leave it.
Right. You're like, forget it. But
I could vacation with this guy.
A friend of the show who has been listening to us from the beginning, she actually was telling me, I was telling her we were going to do this topic, and she said she had a situation. She was out on a business trip last week, and there was three of them, and they split the bill three ways. And she was like, let's make sure we leave the same amount of tip. And one person was like, okay, so I'll put down 17%. She's like, what do you mean? What do you mean 17%? It's 20%. And this person was like, no, I never do 20%. Only if it's really good service will I do 20%. So she actually did like an informal poll to see, like she did a poll on Facebook. And so 34 people took the poll. 27 of them said they always tip 20%. 5 of them said they tip over 20%. 1 said he tips 25%. And 1 person said she tips 30%, which I thought was pretty high.
That's high.
But I mean, I definitely have gone out with friends who are like, okay, you know, like they only give, like, let's say, you know, you're the one doing the bill and you say to them, okay, you owe $30 plus tip. And they give me like 32. And I'm like, yeah, this is really not enough money. And there's one friend in particular that's part of this overall group that the group itself always struggles with her because she does not tip well and we're always making up for it. And we don't quite know how to like broach the topic and say like, right, listen, you really need to be tipping more than you are. So we always throw an extra box because we don't want the server to be shortchanged.
Right.
You know,
20% I think is a good number. I know once they make me vice president around here, I'll start giving
exactly
some more.
Have you ever not tipped? I know I've done it once. I can't recall if I've done it before.
We
but
did
the
it
service
once.
Was horrendous.
Yes.
They basically ignored us.
Yeah.
Like we didn't exist.
I left like I think probably like a 10 or 15% type tip.
So you've never not tipped?
No, because usually if it's a bad experience, it's usually not always the server's fault.
That's
I mean,
true.
It could be part of it, but I always leave something. I don't remember ever walking out and not tipping.
Yeah, I did once at restaurant in Princeton because it was just that bad. Like we had to actually get up out of our seats a couple times to go and ask for someone to come help us. I mean, that's not cool.
That happened to us in Mount Laurel. We were at a restaurant and then Mike's like, you know what? Maybe it was an off night.
True.
We like the kind of food. He's like, let's go back and try. And again, it happened. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's a restaurant.
It's not. Exactly.
Not that server.
Now, the thing you were saying about with the hairdresser, my hairdresser is also a co-owner of the shop. I always tip her.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, like, I don't really quite understand why wouldn't you? They're still rendering a service to you. And I don't think you should, you know, sort of, it shouldn't count against them that they own the store.
I guess it's just a rule that's formed. I tip, my hairdresser does not own the salon, but I do tip. And I do tip at least 20%.
Right.
Just because I want to treat me right.
Do you go to a barber, Sergio?
I go to a barber. It usually costs me just for...
Are you kidding? Look at this look. He has to go to a professional. Yeah.
No, but I wasn't sure if he went to... Like, some men go to a woman's salon.
Oh,
yeah, I used to go to the salon, too. But my barber for a haircut only costs, I think, $21.
So cheap.
And I always leave, like, a $5 or $6 tip.
Okay, no, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's 20%.
Yeah.
So,
what does a haircut cost you? I'm just curious.
It's not too bad because I just get a standard haircut. It's, I think, $32.
You get no color?
No, no color.
Wow,
not
God
until
bless
I go,
you.
Not until I gray, baby. Then I'll start.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
No color.
Oh, I always get, like, a punch of red on top of my
forget
red.
It. It's, like, 100
Yeah,
right?
It's like 100 bucks. Bucks.
Yeah, no.
But highlights are what kill you. That's
super expensive.
Oh, my God. They're, like, crazy expensive.
Yeah, no. It's ridiculous. Well, we want to know how much tip you normally leave at a restaurant. Take our poll over at NJ115.com. Thanks, Sergio.
Bye,
thanks
friend
for
to the
me.
Show.
We appreciate it.
We love you, Sergio. And your red flecked beard.
So, Megan, I think this next topic is an interesting one because it has to do with loss and moving on. And neither one of us have experienced this type of loss. So we're definitely talking about something that we, quite frankly, don't know anything about. But we always have opinions on everything. So there we go. So comedian and actor Patton Oswalt, some of you might remember him from The King of Queens. He played Doug's friend Spence. So Patton lost his wife in April 2016 after she passed away in her sleep. And he wrote an extremely heartfelt, devastating piece about it in the New York Times. It was just so powerful to read. And then in July of this year, he announced his engagement to actress Meredith Salinger. And since everyone has an opinion about everything these days, some people took to social media to question whether Oswald had moved on too quickly. So he stayed mostly silent about the criticism, but he did take to his Twitter account to share a post from blogger Erica Roman criticizing those that were critical of Oswald's engagement. In his post, he said, quote, "I expected some bitter grubworms to weigh in anonymously, always, always, always. with the much needed opinions when I announced my engagement, and I decided to ignore them. But yeah, I felt rage. And then he posted the blog that Erica Roman wrote so that people could read it. And so I have to admit, and I don't know why this is, but I want to be as honest as I can be in this podcast. But when I first read about his engagement, the first thought that did go through my mind was, whoa, it seemed a bit quick to me. And I don't know why I thought that. I don't know if it's because we as a society have these certain ideas about like how soon is too soon, how long is too long. But as I read Erica Roman's blog and others people's opinions about this, because they themselves had gone through losing a spouse, a loved one, mm-hmm. I realized that I have absolutely no right to judge. And I'm not even sure, like I said, why I was judging. I've never been in their shoes. I've never gone through that kind of loss. So I have no idea what it's like to lose the person you most love in the world. And I think one of the things that I really took to heart in what I was reading from these people was, just because they're now with somebody else doesn't mean that they don't love the person who they lost. It doesn't even mean that they moved on, but they're still living and that person isn't. And they still have needs and desires. And, you know, there's nothing they can do about the person that they lost. But I think it's easy to feel, though, like on the outside looking in, that you kind of do have that opinion like, wow, like, you know, you moved on so quick. Like, I mean, are you just completely over it? And the fact of the matter is, no, of course they're not. But I kind of feel like, you know, maybe I thought that because I had that opinion so quickly, and why?
Sure. Well, so, I think Patton Oswalt was very vocal about it. And I think maybe that's why. And it was just such a heart-wrenching story. And he was just so clear about his grief. And I think your heart breaks for someone who actually finds that love in their life and loses it.
Sure.
But also, I think he was so vocal about it, and he went to therapy, and he wanted his daughter to be healthy and well. And I think that helped him heal and brought this new woman into his life in a healthy way.
Right.
It's not like he cocooned himself. It's not like he didn't let us know what was going on. Not that he needs to let us know. I'm just saying he didn't block himself off from the world. And I think that lent itself for him to find joy again. The thing with Patton Oswalt is he deals with depression, openly deals with depression. Unless you've dealt with that in your life, you have no idea what a tricky, hard thing it is to deal with. And he even said, one of the things in the article was how depression is more of like a seducer. It's tricky. With grief, what he felt when his wife died, he said that just comes slamming at you.
Oh my
and
gosh,
it's just
yes.
standing there waiting to attack you at any moment, where depression kind of trickles in. And he said grief is an attack on life. It's not a seducer. It's an ambush, or worse. It stands right out there and says, the minute you try something, I'm waiting for you. Mm-hmm. For him to deal with that and walk through that pain. And the man who wrote the article in the Huffington Post, Andy Ostroy, he said, until you excitedly rush to see your husband or wife and find them dead instead, spare us your judgment or wisdom. And when our pain and sorrow does subside, even temporarily, we just grieve all over again the minute we see our motherless children.
Yeah.
So if Patton Oswalt is a happy man dealing with depression, which is heavy enough, and he's walked through his grief, every time he looks at his daughter, Alice, he's going to remember the mother that she's missing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like this woman gets him. It sounds like she loves him. Meredith Salinger, is that mm-hmm. correct? And they sound happy. I think unless you walk a mile in someone else's shoes, maybe we should all have a little bit of mercy and a little bit of understanding for something hopefully none of us fully understand, unless you've had to lose your spouse.
Yeah, and that's why I felt ashamed of myself when my first reaction was, oh, this seems a little bit soon. Like, mm-hmm. and I don't have really any explanation for why I felt that. And again, but I'm being completely honest, like, sure. That was my first reaction.
And it was mine too, to be honest. Like, wow, that was fast. But I was so happy he was happy.
Exactly. And the more that I read about this, the more I sort of understood, like, it doesn't mean that he no longer grieves for his wife, or he no longer loves his wife. You know, sure. You can love two people at once. You can be happy and still be grieving. I think that I was just thinking, like, it has to sort of be in different compartments. Like, okay, well, if I'm with this person, that means I no longer love that person. And that's how I was thinking about it. But after reading all of these great pieces about grief, over a spouse, it really made me understand more, like, no, that's not what's going on.
And you know what's really, I thought, kind of sums it all up for me in the story. His wife was a crime writer, she was trying to solve real crimes about a serial killer. She was fully working on that. And Patton Oswalt said she was quite close to figuring out what was going on there. And he wants to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to finish that research and he wants to find who the serial killer was and honor her.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't forget who she is.
Right.
But he can't live in that numb place forever. No. Because it's not going to benefit him or his child.
Sure. And that can really destroy you to live in that place, for sure. You know? But it was, you know, when we decided to talk about this topic, I was a little uncomfortable because part of me was like, well, what do I know about any of this? You know, right. I mean, I've gone through loss, but it was parental loss, which is very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not really going out and finding another parent when you lose a parent. So, and it's obviously a different type of love that you have. But I really felt, you know, educated by what I read and feel like I can understand more why, you know, moving on is important and that it shouldn't be about like, oh, it's been 365 days, whatever. That doesn't matter.
Right. He went into Wake Her Up. So imagine, God forbid. Saturday morning, you go in and you agree your husband's gonna sleep in, and you go and you shake him awake and he's gone.
I mean that's
overwhelming.
Yeah.
And he said he kept blinking trying to wake himself up. So until you're in that pain and you can get through it and maybe find some joy, who are we to begrudge him from that?
Exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, he made a good point with everybody, you know, always has an opinion. And it's true. Like, and always anonymously, always. And it's true. Like, why are we so opinionated about everything? And social media has certainly given us that platform.
Right.
To be able to voice that opinion. Because really, when we were growing up and even in college, we gave our opinions to our friends or our family members and it ended there. But now there's this whole entire platform where you can give your opinion to the whole entire world.
Right.
And we're just so judgmental.
We really are.
Well, if you have a story you would like to share about moving on after a loved one's death, let us know by emailing us at forever39@nj115.com. So that wraps up this episode of Forever 39.
Wow.
On next week's show, we're going to take a citizenship test.
Oh my God.
I have a feeling we're going to flunk this badly. So this should be interesting. We're also going to tell you how to spot the signs that your husband has checked out of the relationship and bullying at school and beyond. So I hope you guys will join us for next week's program.
Have a great week.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.